We have to stop doing impact evaluations of youth training programs and being happy that participants get jobs faster than the control group. What if all the program did was redistribute existing jobs? Do we have any idea of who did not get the jobs the participants got, but would have?
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, a series of interviews with leading practitioners around the world. My name is Tim Phillips. Its motto is From the American People, and it has an annual budget of $27 billion. So how does USAID decide how and where to channel its efforts? Today we're speaking to Louise Fox, who is USAID's chief economist. Louise, welcome. USAID's remit is to support US foreign policy. Does this ever tie your hands and mean that some interventions are economically feasible, but not politically possible?
First of all, I should say that bilateral aid agencies, by definition, reflect the priorities of a nation's people as expressed through their government. And in the U.S., this means both the executive branch, the president, the cabinet, and the heads of agencies who set broad policy directions, and Congress, whose job is to appropriate the funds. And in the U.S., Congress takes its job very seriously. Unlike in a parliamentary system, Congress itself develops a detailed budget for the government, including USAID. And the USAID budget normally includes allocations by program and by some specific countries or regions. And these appropriations do reflect American values and generosity, as well as our objectives of security at home and abroad. So what that means is that some sectors and types of projects are prioritized over others by Congress. For example, over 50% of our development assistance in sub-Saharan Africa is spent in the health sector. That includes specific programs for specific issues, such as PEPFAR, the longstanding U.S. program to treat victims of HIV/AIDS and help countries prevent further transmission. Now, the health sector is not the only priority for low and lower middle income African countries, but it is a sector where the U.S. has worked a long time and we have a lot of expertise and we've provided global leadership. Another sector that Congress prioritizes is the agriculture sector for sub-Saharan Africa and other low and lower middle income countries. And this is another area where the U.S. has a strong knowledge base and experience, so we have a lot to share. So it's reasonable that Congress prioritizes these needs. That may mean that other donors have to lead in other sectors and programs that are valuable economically, but not a focus of U.S. foreign assistance right now. For example, DFID has been a leader in social protection programs for the poor. U.S. is not a leader in this area, as it can be problematic politically. We do provide humanitarian assistance and cash, but we're not a leader in helping countries develop sustainable cash transfer systems the way DFID does. That's not a priority here.
You know that donor fatigue is always a problem. Does it worry you when you hear the calls to spend less overseas and more close to home?
From a U.S. perspective, not really. I should say that Congress, both political parties, have long been supporter of U.S. development assistance. But what it does mean is that USAID and other aid agencies as well have to continue our efforts to spend our taxpayers' money effectively. In the U.S., that means in accordance with U.S. laws and regulations. And we have to be accountable for our results. This is an ongoing, constant challenge. Part of that challenge includes developing and using evidence on what types of programs and investments work to increase economic growth and improve living standards. I personally take that challenge seriously in my job as economic advisor to the agency.
In what ways do you think that aid can have the most impact on development at the moment?
Well, we have to recognize that inclusive economic development and poverty reduction comes through private sector job creation. This means economic development has to be a priority for developing countries and for donors. It was the creation of millions of new, more productive jobs since 1990 that was the main driving force behind having the share of the population in the developing world living in extreme poverty. Now, another reason why I'm not so concerned about donor fatigue is that actually private sources accounted for over 80% of all financial flows to developing countries. So that's really where the money is coming for economic development. Supporting enterprise-led growth has been a priority for USAID for a long time. And in the aftermath of the 2008 global recession, not only USAID, but other donors started to put productive employment and job creation a lot higher on the development agenda. Now, I would say until recently, most countries and most aid agencies saw the youth employment problem as an issue of youth human capital. They called for more training. In fact, my own research and that of others has shown that the youth employment problem in developing countries is structural. The lack of demand for labor in productive enterprises is really the problem, as well as the lack of productivity on farms. And so I think these are areas where development aid can really have an impact on economic development. Now, I would say that opportunities for higher earnings are created through public and private investment to transform economies, link markets, lower transaction costs, and use new technology, all in the service of producing more value in the economy, economic growth. And certainly education systems, as well as families and communities, play an important role in building up the human capital youth need to be productive. And USAID has been active in the education sector, as have a lot of other donors recently, and that has been an area where traditionally donor aid has been helpful. But we can't train our way out of this employment problem. We just have to focus on the demand side more. And I think this means we have to stop doing impact evaluations of youth training programs and being happy that participants get jobs faster than the control group. What about the general equilibrium effects? What if all the program did was redistribute existing jobs? Do we have any idea of who did not get the jobs the participants got, but would have? Is that really a good use of money? So I would say, yes, youth can develop skills, especially non-cognitive ones, until the age of 25 or so. We know that from brain research. And actually, evidence shows that these skills contribute a lot to earning power. People in problem-solving skills will be in high demand in the 21st century economy, not technical skills for routine jobs, but the jobs have to be created in the private sector through private investment. And in this area of private sector enterprise-led development, I'm really excited about new impact evaluation research that focuses on the role of management in enterprise success and job creation. Until recently, research on what works in private sector development focused on firm profits and longevity. These are important for sure, but finally in this research, employment outcomes are being measured as well, and that's great. I can give a shout out to a number of colleagues working on that, including people at the World Bank, David McKinsey, Miriam Bruhn, and researchers such as Chris Woodruff, and the studies he has supported with donor funds under the PEDAL program. And I also see the work of the International Growth Center on Enterprise Development in Sub-Saharan Africa as hugely important in understanding what works and for helping us in aid agencies program better.
Aren't things like the quality of management extremely hard to measure?
We've also had quite a bit of new research and experimentation in this area, and so we can do a much better job of measuring it. Blum and von Rienen and their co-authors comes to mind, for example. And I would say at USAID, we're really trying to apply some of that research in our own programs. What that research highlighted was the role of addressing specific management challenges, not general kind of enterprise, how to be an entrepreneur, but specific management challenges in firms. And we recently concluded the first stage of a project in Tunisia, which is not an easy place for enterprise-led development right now owing to the security challenges. But by helping medium-sized firms improve their management in specific areas that allow them to expand sales, it seems that new jobs were created. Now, we at USAID can't do real attribution for this project because there was no control group, but the results look really good.
Are there some regions where it's just not possible to do much to stimulate the demand side?
obviously, in an overall situation of low economic growth, and obviously in a conflict situation especially, it's more difficult. And so I think one of the biggest challenges in youth employment today is in post-conflict situations. But again, we have to go back to a proper analysis of the economy. What is the potential of the economy? How can we support that economy develop? And how can we ensure that private investment is happening in labor-intensive areas? And that includes agriculture. That includes making farmers more productive. Reducing underemployment is at least as important a challenge in terms of youth employment in low and lower middle income countries as new jobs in urban areas.
Should we be paying more attention to the types of jobs we create and who gets these jobs? For example, the quality of new jobs for women.
First of all, in low income countries, most everybody works. So targeting the number of the jobs kind of doesn't make sense. The quality of jobs matters a whole lot. No question about it. And there we need to target earnings. That's a good measure of the quality of jobs. Of course, other measures such as health and safety are important as well. And certainly nobody in the development space supports things like child labor and slave labor. So we have to make sure that those fundamental human rights are protected.
What types of interventions do you think we'll see more of in the future?
Well, I should say, first of all, that one challenge that USAID technical staff have in doing their jobs is keeping up with new research. I see that as part of my job to draw attention to new economic research and what it means for programming. You mentioned women and the gender issue. There's a lot of new economic research going on what works for women, entrepreneurs, for example. And I think we're going to see a lot more and a lot more effective programs in that area. If women entrepreneurs were more productive, they would create more jobs. So we can't let that human capital and that potential go away. Now, should we prioritize women entrepreneurs over male entrepreneurs, women participants in programs over male participants in programs, some disadvantaged group or another disadvantaged group? Well, my answer is, if a country makes an explicit decision toward redistribution, that's the country's choice, and you can prioritize a different area. If a country makes an explicit choice to try to help a disadvantaged area, that's an explicit policy choice, and we should work their unemployment programs. I think, however, overall, what we're going to see is a lot more effective across-the-board programs helping medium-sized firms run by women, run by men, run by youth, not run by youth, improve and create more jobs and raise their productivity and therefore raise the earnings of the workers. So I think we're going to see a lot more in that space. I think there's a wide agreement that private sector development is needed to achieve the SDGs, to achieve economic development. So I think enterprise-driven development is going to get a lot more attention.
Louise, do you ever find that your plans are in conflict with the governments in the regions you're trying to help? What do you do about it when you do?
Let me say that that's the challenge of everybody operating in development space. It's not just a challenge of USAID. It's a challenge of NGOs. It's a challenge of multilateral development banks, where I worked before I came to USAID. And the trick is to find an overlap between what the country wants to achieve and how it thinks it can achieve it, and what are the constraints to achieving it, and where the development actor has a comparative advantage in helping them achieve it. And I think then when you can find that overlap of interests, then development aid can really be effective. And where you don't have that overlap of interests, I think a development partner doesn't really have too much to do in that space, in that area.
Louise Fox, thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you too. Can I also say I'm super grateful for VoxDev and its contributions to the objective of improving the quality of aid programming.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more podcasts from VoxDev, check out our website at voxdev.org.